Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am very excited to have Kathy McGee of Hema Designs on. She's an author and a teacher, and she's a longtime maker of very pretty, cheerful, happy things. I just love her work. She makes the kind of things that I want to make. She designs the kind of things that I want to make. And one of the interesting things Kathy does is she works with oil cloth. And so we're going to talk a bit about that and the kind of work that she does. So thank you for being here, Kathy.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
Now, where did you learn to sew? How did you get interested in that?
So I actually have been sewing since I was a kid. My grandmother sewed, my mom sews, and I've just always loved working with I ended up going to college, and I studied apparel design, and I worked for many years as a clothing designer. And then that's kind of how I started Hema Design, because I just wanted to do something on my own.
Oh, wow. So you actually designed clothing that, you know, for like a big company?
I did. I worked for some major retailers over the years. And so I did everything from kids' clothing, women's, men's. I did accessories. Yeah, you name it. I designed it.
Wow. You know, I probably would have thought that would have been my dream job had I known people actually had real jobs like that when I was a kid. You know, I didn't know there were real people that did that, that you could do that. That's cool.
Right.
So you told me that your Minnesota roots really shape a lot of what you design now, you know, and why you design it. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so growing up in Minnesota, there's just a huge Scandinavian influence here, and I've just always been attracted to Scandinavian design because it's really, you know, simple and graphic and bright. There's usually something kind of witty about the design or clever, which makes me happy. And we have very long cold winters here, so I think it's important to have, you know, cheery things around your house that really warm it up and help you get through the winter. So that's kind of where I'm coming from when I design things. You know, and so I design home accessories and bike accessories and some personal accessories. And I like to use fabrics that you can find in any quilt shop. And, you know, that's where I'm coming from with my patterns.
Yeah, that's the part I like, is that they really are cheerful. And that's important to me because I like to make happy quilts and I like to make happy looking things. You know, that's, you know.
Yeah, it's like my whole philosophy is your things should make you happy. Otherwise, why have them, you know?
I agree. We're going to be best friends, Kathy.
I'm sure we are.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about oil cloth, because as a quilt maker, I have had oil cloth and I've talked to people about it in the past, and I've maybe tried to sew it once. And so it's sort of like a mystery product for me. How did you get interested in working with it?
So it was completely by accident. I was in my local fabric store, and they had rolls and rolls of oil cloth in their window. And I was so attracted to it because it was really bright and graphic. I loved the prints and patterns, and I bought some because I was like, I need to make something out of this. And I ended up just fooling around with it for a long time and trying to figure out, you know, what works best and learning some tips and techniques for it. And I ended up coming up with one of my first patterns, which is the Sigrid Oilcloth Market Bag.
Ah, so now I want to know, what are the things, like a quilt maker like me who generally is working with cotton at the moment, what do we need to know about oilcloth? What are a couple of tips?
Well, it's going to be a little thicker than, you know, quilting weight cotton. So you want to use a larger needle. So you're going to use a number 16 needle, which is like a denim needle. And then most quilters already have a walking foot. And so I use a walking foot all the time because it works well on thick fabric. And it also, because oilcloth has a like a coated surface to it, which tends to stick to a presser, your presser foot, just a regular one, a walking foot works really great for like feeding it through your sewing machine.
So the material itself, why I meant to ask this, why is it called oilcloth?
I think it's because originally, like back in, you know, the 20s, 30s, it was actually oiled fabric. But the modern day version of it that you buy now, it's fabric that has a plastic coating on it. So it makes it waterproof.
And just on one side, right?
Yeah. A lot of the heavier ones have like maybe a thinner coat on the back, but you can see the woven fabric on the back, and then the top of it, the facing side of it has, a thicker coat of plastic on it.
So you took this concept of, you know, you started playing around with it and you're making patterns, and then you decided to work with it for your book, which is called The Happy Bicycle. That is so fun. How did this come about? How did, you know, first of all, it's an incredibly fun title.
Yeah, well, once again, I wanted a happy title. And, well, the book happened because I have four patterns in the Hema design line that are bike baskets or bags. And I came up with those patterns because I love biking and I love accessories. And the idea was I just wanted a cute handbag or a cute basket that I could carry around. But, you know, so happens that you can attach it to your bicycle also. So I really love dual uses for things like that. And I had all these other ideas for bike accessories, and I didn't necessarily see them as, you know, single patterns, but I thought it would make a great book. So I pitched the idea to C&T Publishing, and they liked it, and that's how it all started. And not all the projects are oilcloth in the book. There's a little bit of everything. There's quilting weight cotton. There's decorator weight cotton. There's a couple of knitting projects. There's craft projects. So there's a little something for everyone. And it's really arranged so that in each chapter it's about, like, a different ride. So maybe you're going on a picnic, or maybe it's a fall day. And there's something for every skill level, too, so from beginners to experienced sewers.
You know, I think that that's an excellent way to set it up, because it sort of groups the different items together in, like, how you might actually make and use them.
Exactly. And, you know, it's not like you have to put every accessory on your bike at once, but it's kind of a fun option. So just to see how to, you know, you could use it if you wanted.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should put the ball on.
More is more.
Yeah. So tell me about the, I don't even know what you call it, because you said I don't ride bikes. So, but the thing on the wheel that's pretty, the fan thing.
Oh,
what is
the skirt guard. That is one of my favorite projects. So if you're in like Amsterdam or Stockholm, where they ride their bikes around all the time, and they have those great bikes where you sit up straight, they'll come with skirt guards on them. So that's to protect your dress or your skirt from blowing into your wheels.
Oh.
So I decided I was going to make one myself. If you have a fender on the rear wheel of your bike, you can just attach this over it, and it's just cute and fun.
I see. Well, and it's useful. So because
exactly. It's happy and it's useful.
And we bike in our skirts all the time here. So
that's right.
Well, we could pretend.
That's right. Well, it's more decorative than anything, but I think it's fun. Yeah.
Oh, they're so cute. I mean, they're incredibly cute. Now I was curious, because we'll go back to the oilcloth thing a bit, because you do have some of the bags in here made with oilcloth, some are not. But do you have to line them when you're using that, is to protect it?
No, it really depends what you're making. But, you know, oilcloth is really stiff. So, like, my market bags, I don't line those. You don't have to. But my bike baskets, I do line in cotton fabric just because it's cute. And, you know, if you're doing a drawstring lining, then you can hold things in that way. So you don't have to line it. And the awesome thing about oilcloth is it you don't have to finish the seam allowances because, you know, it doesn't shred or anything.
Oh, it doesn't unravel.
Kind of cool
okay.
thing. Exactly.
Yeah. And you also have a class online at the Craftsy class format for working with oilcloth, right?
I do. It's tips and techniques for sewing oilcloth. And in the class, we make a market bag, and there's two sizes. There's a large and a small. And we also make a sewing basket that's really cute.
Okay, so let's talk organization because we have about a minute and a half. Tell me your sort of favorite organization tip.
So I have tons of bins and baskets in my collection and my sewing pattern collection. And, you know, I love putting things in them. But the thing is, like, since you have to look at them, I think they should be cheery and happy. So that's my whole philosophy, not just, you know, it's not just about putting things in a box. It's about looking at something that is really cute. So that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. And you do have a lot of really adorable patterns. You have one called the Brita Hoopster Basket.
Hoopster Basket. That's a really popular pattern of mine. It has the embroidery hoops for the handles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really fun one. It comes in two different sizes, and you can use strips of fabric to make it, or you can make it out of one piece of fabric. And yeah, that's a really, really popular pattern I have.
It looks super sturdy, too. How do you keep it that firm looking?
That's one of my secrets. So it's batting. It's two layers of batting, but then along the edges, I use dressmaker's boning, you know, the kind of stuff that you find in like prom dresses and corsets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of gives it that stiff little edge.
Ah, perfect. So we get the insider tips here on my show all the time. So so Kathy, everybody can find you where?
So I'm at hemadesign.com, and you can buy my patterns on Etsy. At Hema Design Patterns, and then you can also find my class on Craftsy. And all the information for all of these things are at hemadesign.com.
Thank you so much, Kathy, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and our show is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them online and go to the Moda Bake Shop, where there's all kinds of fantastic projects. And if you're looking for something to do with your charm pack or your jelly roll, just go there and put it in the search box, and you'll come up with lots of things. Now, I am really excited to talk to Heather Crimshaw, who is a author and a designer and a regular contributor to American Patchwork and Quilting's family of magazines. We are going to talk some color and design and everything else. Hi, Heather. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Pat?
I am wonderful. I'm so glad to have you here.
I'm very honored to be here. Thank you.
You know, would you tell me just a little backstory? You know, how did you get interested in sewing?
Well, originally my mom sewed when I was a little girl. From the time I was 3 and 4, she was always making presents for all my cousins and that kind of stuff. And I remember being really fascinated with the sewing machine, and it was always like off limits. And one night she got up to go stir dinner, and I hopped on the sewing machine with this piece of, like, it was like a leather key fob. And I ended up breaking needles and doing damage to the machine. And that was like, I got in big trouble, but she bought me my own machine so then I could try it out my own. So that was like how I first got started in sewing.
Oh, that's so funny. So you were just like, you thought you were going to sneak in there and sew something.
Yeah, she never knows. Yeah. And then, I got hand sewing for a little while, but it was a while before I was trusted with her machines again.
Now, when we were talking prior to the show, you told me that your sort of quilt making changed a lot when you discovered, by going to one of the Modern Quilt Guild events, you sort of discovered this whole venue of style that you had not seen before.
Yeah, a little bit. It was kind of validation, too. I made garment sewing, originally that's how I started out, and then I switched to sewing, to quilting, I should say. And a lot of what I saw was so, I consider it overdone. And so I was always like, yeah, we don't need that border in there. We don't need that in there. I mean, I love looking at it, but when it came time for making it, I'm like, yeah, we don't do snowball corners in my world. So we're just going to just get rid of that. And it was kind of eye-opening to see what other people were doing out there, which was essentially what I tried to do too, which was eliminate some of it and give it more of a clean, crisp feel. It was just kind of completely eye-opening. I moved to Austin, Texas in 2009 when this was just starting, and there was a lot of modern quilters there. And you got a lot of instant feedback of, oh, yeah, I love that quilt. And it was empowering, if nothing else, that your thoughts and your designs were beautiful as they were.
You know, I think it's so many people I talk to that when they found others that were doing the same thing, it really became sort of like a click, click, click for you. You know, it's like, okay, now I can find my tribe. That's
true. Those are my people. I found them.
You found
your
people.
Honestly, anybody who does anything with fiber is my person. I love anybody who can create. And not that I don't respect people who love snowball corners. I just don't personally. So, it's cool.
Yeah, and we all have our own style, and that's the one amazing thing about quilt making is that you can find the entire range of the world out there made in fiber and called a quilt. So it's super fantastic. I want you to have you tell me a little bit about your current quilt in Quilts and More, the fall 2015 issue called Framed. It's done in one of my favorite colors, which is teal, which I believe
teal.
You like as well. That's
yes. So a lot of what I take inspiration from is things that I see around me. There are so many things either in nature or in architecture that people have already figured out the exact right parameters for how much of this to put here. And, some of this is already figured out for you. So oftentimes I take inspiration from things around me. And this one happened to be from the molding around my fireplace. I loved it. I loved my fireplace. That was just perfect. And so I took the general size and shape of it and then repeated it a whole bunch of times and played with it and twisted and turned it and made it all blue, which made it perfect for me. It's one of my favorite quilts. I know I have a girlfriend who comes home and she goes, oh, I love that quilt. I'm like, I do too, but it's my color, so you can't have it. So that's how the inspiration came about. And my whole book is that inspiration too, where I see something, I snap a photo of it, and then make it into something that I can curl up on the couch with.
You know, what I really like, Heather, is that for the framed that's in the magazine, you shared a picture of the of your fireplace so that we can actually see how you developed the work, because it's inspired, but it's not a copy, which I think is, you know, you didn't just make the fireplace into a quilt. You used bits and parts. How did you come up with the shading of the different fabrics? How do you handle that? Because it's not just it's a two color quilt, but it's not a two fabric quilt.
No, it is definitely not. Honestly, for this one, as I said, I'm a lover of teal, and I have an extensive teal fabric stash. I actually went and started picking out solids, and I picked out basically my favorites. I think there are, never mind, I'm not going to tell you how many there are in there.
Yeah.
But I basically went over and I just started picking out my favorite pieces, because this was a quilt that I want to enjoy. So why not use your favorite fabrics? And so I went over and just started picking out all my favorite colors out of my solid collection. And that's how it came about. It wasn't anything too fancy. It was just what appealed to me and just what makes my heart sing, which just happens to be teal.
Yeah. Now, you know, we're still going to stay on this a second, because what I find is the more I look at this, the more fascinated I am. Because when you designed like this with, you know, several shades of the same color, and there's also a lot of white in this particular quilt, so it's primarily white looking. How do you play around to get those particular shades in the right place?
I use a design wall a lot of the time. In this particular one, after I had selected my fabrics, and I started, and I had the general philosophy of how big I wanted each piece to be, and then I started putting them up on my design wall, and then it came into a block, and then the block went into the quilt. And they're not all perfectly symmetrical either. I twisted some of them, so they're slightly off-center, because I didn't want it to be a strip quilt. I didn't want it to look perfectly parallel the whole way. And all of that, for me, that was just me sitting there with probably a glass of wine, and looking at my design wall going, let's flip that one this way, or let's do this one this way, or something like that, that made it more appealing to my eyes and eliminated the absolute linear pattern in it. It has a little bit of an off pattern.
Yeah. I just love it. It's really, really wonderful.
Thank you.
So let's continue on a little bit with your designing for this. Your book is called Graphic Quilts from Everyday Images. What are a few of the pieces that inspired a quilt in that book?
So one of the very first quilts that happens in teal also is designed from my what hangs the garage door opener in the garage. Mm. There's these metal brackets, and they have like circles punched out of them. And for a lot of times when I am inspired by something, I will be like sitting in the car or whatever and looking at it going, why in the world did they think of do it that way? And then it just evolves into, well, what could I do with that shape?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ones in there. There's everything from architecture. When I go on trips, I often snap pictures of interesting buildings, interesting architecture, interesting trees. Some of it just pops a color. There's also one in there based upon like springtime in the South. And when you drive around and you see the dark trees and the vivid, bright green grass around it, there's a quilt that's based on that too. So usually it's a color or a feeling or a design or just something that intrigues me. And sometimes it can even be the ugliest thing possible that I want to make prettier.
Yeah.
There's one that's based upon rose thorns too. You know, in the dead of winter, your rose bushes don't look too good, but you still have the thorns there. And there's one that's based upon a picture of a rose bush with just a thorn.
That is really neat. It's a great book. I mean, it's a great book for people who want to sort of push their limit and, you know, kind of come out of what they're normally doing and look at their world a different way, which I think is wonderful. Totally wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Now, I want to get one more thing in, because you also are a designer that likes to use some specialty rulers. And we were talking about one of the rulers out there called a Hex and More, and you've designed some projects with it. What do you like about specialty rulers?
You know, I like tools. I have found that there is a limit to how much fabric I can reasonably store in my house without getting in too much trouble. Yeah. I know that's probably totally crazy, but I do have a limit on how much fabric. However, tools I find store a little easier. So yeah. I always love looking at tools. And sometimes you walk into a fabric store and I'm like, I have that and I have that and I have that. But you can go over the ruler section. It's a whole other place where you can buy stuff. Yeah. I love rulers that work well and rulers that make my life better. For me, it's kind of like having a power tool or a specialty knife in the kitchen that mm-hmm. does just that right thing. And the Hex and More really fascinates me because the angles you can get with it. I like math, but I don't pretend to be a mathematician, and I love how everything nestles together mm-hmm. with that ruler. Everything just works out. And when I make a project with it, all the seams line up, which means it's now my favorite ruler ever. Because if my seams lined up, I'm happy.
Ah, so that's, I think people don't explore specialty rulers enough because it is the proper tool. Use the proper tool to do something.
Yes.
And the whole thing's more fun and faster. Now, the quilt that you shared with me was called Dynamite.
Yes, it is. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, just describe it real quick. We have probably just real quick because we're almost done.
Okay. It uses the Hex and More ruler almost mm-hmm. exclusively, and it uses all the different various sizes in the ruler. So the ruler will cut small to big, and I started with the big one, and then I made small ones, and they're all kind of nestled in there in one quilt. And it's one of my favorite things to make. In fact, I'm making it for a friend right now.
Well, I think it's really clever because you actually teach people how to use all the different components of a specialty ruler all for one project. So that is, mm-hmm. I think that part is really, really fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, Heather. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate talking with you.
From start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. You can find Heather at fiberosity.com. You can see her writing and learn about all her things. So another author that is doing some really, really adorable work, and I really just love it because the word applique is in the title of her book. Amy Struckmeyer is here. She's a designer and author, and she is also an architect. So I just find that fascinating how people bring in their life work to what they're doing. So Amy, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
You know, today is my day to find out how everybody got interested in sewing. So now
okay.
It's your turn. Yeah. How did you discover sewing?
You know, I learned to hand sew in elementary school. I went to a Waldorf school, which really focused on handcrafts. We also learned knitting and weaving and even woodworking. And I've always really enjoyed working with my hands. But it's really only recently that I became passionate about quilt making. The deconstructed Lone Star quilt that mm-hmm. won an award last year at QuiltCon was only my seventh quilt.
Wow.
And there's a quilt in my book, The Circles Baby Quilt, which I think was only my third quilt. So so quilting is new, but sewing is not.
Yep. You know, it's funny because people will think, oh, you know, it's so hard to quilt. It's like, well, try to put set in sleeves, you know. I think it's easier.
Exactly.
Easy. I used to get them in the wrong side, you know, and it's like they just don't look that good that way. So as an architect, how do you think that has sort of molded what you're doing with your quilts?
Well, for one thing, I still draw most of my quilt and applique designs in AutoCAD when I'm not hand sketching them, just because I'm very familiar with the software. It's got a great offset function, so I can offset whatever seam allowance I need, which is great. But I also think my architecture background kind of helps me to figure out how to pick apart a pattern and helps me to write instructions for the pattern, kind of to, you know, pull it apart and figure out how to instruct someone else to make it.
Yeah, I think understanding how things are made, no matter what kind of background you come from. I wrote code for a living for 20 years. So you know how, you know, things go together. Therefore, when you have to write about it to explain it, that's all second nature, that part. I just love that you use AutoCAD, too. That is so great. At least it's not a spreadsheet. Right. I know somebody who does that. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so let's talk about your book, which is A Bit of Applique, Easy Projects with a Modern Flair. It's got this great bag on the cover, which is actually got, do you have, wool on there, right?
Yes, wool felt.
Wool felt. Oh, that's incredible.
I love working with wool felt.
How did you come up with the projects that you wanted to include it here? Kind of what is the theme of the book?
Well, really, ultimately, this is the book that I wished I had had 4 or 5 years ago when I was learning applique. Because at the time, I wasn't quilting yet. And most of the applique books that I found were applique for quilters. And that completely intimidated me. So I was looking for books that had a bit of a modern bent, but also smaller projects that I could quickly make and learn different techniques. And so really, that's what my book became. So, you know, I wanted it to have a variety of applique techniques, both things that were hand-sewn or machine-sewn. And actually, most of the projects in the book you could make either way. But I also, and so in a way, it's sort of like a primer for those wanting to try applique. But I also wanted it to be full of projects that were useful, giftable, and modern in a way, but so that you could sew something up quickly, complete a project, and have learned a new technique in the process.
You know, I think that that's really an interesting approach to do this for somebody who really isn't making quilts yet. Maybe they're making dolls or they're, you know, making clothing and they just want to figure out how to put some shapes on things.
Right. And there are two quilts in the book. It's not strictly a quilt book. It's really a sewing pattern book, but there are a couple of quilts in the book. So it really covers sort of all just a range of different project types.
So tell me I'm looking right now at the pillow called the geometric throw pillow. And what I love is that it's not all, you know, fussy sewn down. It's so cool.
Yeah. And that really is kind of a unique project in the book because it's maybe a broad definition of applique. Really, it's the quilting lines that hold down the shapes.
Yeah,
and like you said, they're not sewn down in a traditional way.
Right. But it's a pillow, and for a pillow, that's totally fine. And it's also the shapes are the felt, so they're not
Yes,
unraveling.
And it gives, right, so the wool felt is great because it doesn't fray at the edges. And the project it's nice because it's got kind of a three-dimensional feel to it. And you can try this technique, sew up the pillow pretty quickly and, you know, see if you like it or not. You know, if you like that technique.
When did you start playing around with the wool felt?
Oh, gosh. That's a good question.
I didn't mean it to be a trick question. That's
yeah, I don't really remember. I was making applique projects mostly for magazines and publications. Mm-hmm. And at some point I must have tried out the felt, but I remember doing a lot of research about felt and trying different types of felt, and that was when I really got hooked on the wool, because it doesn't come apart the way acrylic felt does.
Right.
It just has such a nice feel to it.
And are you pre-washing it in advance to working with it?
I don't ever pre-wash the wool felt, partly because I'm working with smaller pieces. I mean, buy it. I don't usually buy it by the yard, although occasionally I do. Mm-hmm. But
so
it just is already so soft. I don't think it needs to be washed.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. The one project also that you have in the book that I loved, just how it developed, was your garden skirt. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite projects in the book, because it's based on a drawing that my daughter made of a flower garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to keep the kind of whimsical nature of that design when I transferred it to this project.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did is I combined raw edge applique with embroidery. And so there are embroidery stitches to stitch kind of some of the accent pieces on the sort of petals on one of the flowers and leaves along one of the stems. But then I also used embroidery floss to stitch down the raw edged applique.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than using a blanket stitch, which would have been really fussy on these little tiny pieces, I just used a regular applique stitch, but just made kind of bigger stitches than I would normally use if I was, say, needle turning applique. And it just gives it, so you can really see the stitches. It gives it this kind of whimsy and playfulness that I wanted it to have.
You know, what's the most adorable part to me is the orange flower that has the sort of loops all along the stem,
right?
Which I think might be leaves.
Well, it was my daughter's interpretation of leaves.
You know, how old was she when she drew this drawing?
She was probably five, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just so adorable because you have the drawing in here, and the flower looks like a heart. It is just precious. It is so precious. And I think so many people have drawings from their kids that these techniques that you share in here make it so easy to transfer that style. You know, you're trying to keep the feel, like you said.
Right. Well, and I would love if people took the techniques from this book and used them to design their own applique patterns. I just think that's ultimately, you know, what I hope for, because it's fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. I always tell people that you have the most freedom when you can applique.
Right.
You don't
and you can
have
completely. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say
you can completely personalize a project and make it unique and your own with applique.
And it's, you can enlarge and make smaller, and it's, you know, the, you don't have any points that have to match. It's like
true.
Total freedom. Well, the book is is fantastic. I want to touch on something else while I have you here today. We were talking about designing, and you said that sometimes you kind of like, you know, submit designs, and then you're like, oh, I wonder how I'm going to make that. Is this
right?
Is that
ever
stressful?
I do that all the time.
Oh, this all the
it's actually a good thing, because it pushes me outside of my comfort zone a little bit, and because I'm committing to something, then I have to follow through. But a good example of that is a quilt that I recently designed for a publication that's made up of half rectangle triangles in different sizes. And I, after I, you know, fell in love with the pattern that I had designed, I realized that half rectangle triangles are not nearly as easy to sew as half square triangles. And so I did a lot of research, a lot of math, a lot of experimentation in order to come up with a method that worked for each size, because there are multiple sizes of half rectangle triangles in the quilt. And I didn't want to use a manufactured template because I didn't want someone making the pattern to have to go out and buy something else. Mm-hmm. So once I figured it out, then it was really satisfying to make the quilt, have the corners meet, have the points turn out nice and crisp. But it was a lot of effort and stress sort of to get there. In the end, it was completely worth it, though.
You know, that's how we learn. And I think creative people who particularly are in the business side of things, those kind of challenges make you develop something that's more unique.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah. And I mean, I really love that process.
Mm-hmm. Figuring out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we have just a little bit of time here, about 2 minutes. I want you to tell me what – we have sort of a topic going on this month of secrets from designers, how you make your quilts better. So you have a really nice thought about how to do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that this is how to make your quilts better, although ultimately I guess it is. It's very basic, which is just to simply start. I find I do a lot of sort of thinking about what I want to make, and really ultimately, and sometimes it's just that I'm feeling creatively blocked. And at those times, the best advice that I can give myself is to just start making. And it doesn't even matter what it is. Mm-hmm. But it's that process of creating and making with your hands. I think it gets your brain working in a different way. It leads to other things. And, I mean, it might just be that it gets me off the computer screen and back to making real physical objects. But it really, I think it's just, it helps a lot in...
I think that it's excellent advice because simply start. I mean, I just loved how you said that. Simply start. Just get up and do something. And sometimes I tell people, just push some fabric under the needle, you know, just
half square
triangles, whatever, squares. Just do something.
Right. And you might make something that you're not happy with, but then it could lead to something else that just becomes something that you wouldn't have even thought of.
Yeah, and it just gets you in the motion of doing and making.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amy, this has been so much fun.
It has been great. It was truly a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Everybody can visit Amy at formworkdesign.blogspot.com. We'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I am really delighted to have Julie Hendrickson here, the owner of JJ Stitches from Sun Prairie, which is in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. She is a regular contributor to the family of magazines for American Patchwork and Quilting, and She's an antique quilt collector as well as a maker and a shop owner. And I'm, you know, we're going to talk about her new book, which has a lot of these antique quilts in it. So hi, Julie. How are you?
Hi, Pat. Nice to talk to you today.
You know, I was asking the other guests, you know, how they got started sewing, but I'm going to twist your question around a little bit as to how you got started collecting antique quilts, because you've been doing this for like 30 years. It's a long time.
I have always been a sewer. I have sewn since a very young age, started making doll clothes, and my mom and I were out shopping, and we happened to pass an antique quilt an antique store, and we saw a few antique quilts in the window. Mm. And so we decided to go in and look. I had been sewing and not quilting for very long, and was intrigued by the quilts and thought, okay, one of them was a sunbonnet Sue. I will probably never make that. It looks too hard. It's something that looks like it's different from piecing. Must be applique. So let me see how much that is. Mm-hmm. And so I guess a collection started, because someone once told me a collection is more than two. And that very day I bought three quilts.
Oh, my God. Oh, you bought.
So my first purchase ever of an antique quilt was three quilts. So I purchased that one, and I got to talking to the lady, talked about sewing, you know, talked about, you know, someday wanting to make quilts. I've only really made one or two. And she gave me such a special price. She said, you know, they were $30. She would give them to me for $20 or $25 if I purchased them all. So my first quilts, all three of them, were like $65. And that started my collection.
And do you still have them?
I still have them. I always have every intention. Somebody else said a good way to start collecting antique quilts would be to start with ones you can afford, and then as you get more quilts, you can make your collection more selective and get rid of the ones. Well, I have never, ever parted with an antique quilt. I just can't do it.
Oh, so when you had those three and you took them home, did you didn't own your store yet? I mean, did you really ever envision where you would be 30 years later after those three came home?
I did not. I did not. My son was three or four, and I had put him in a preschool. And that preschool was very close to an antique shop. So preschool's very short. It's only 2 hours or whatever. So I started hanging out at the quilt shop and got more interested in thinking, you know, I can probably make more of these quilts. And that's how it all started. So,
So everybody should have the preschool next to the quilt shop. That'll be sure you
so.
Get.
I that's think how you... so. Get a lot of those young mothers.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so let's talk about the collection, because I want to get like a little story, you know, a little info about it, and then we'll talk about your book. But you collect a sort of specific things now, right?
I do. And I think probably a lot of people collect the same time period maybe as I do, because those quilts have in the past 25, 30 years been readily available. You know, I mean, I would love to have pre-Civil War quilts. I only have a couple, but, I mean, those aren't affordable, nor are they readily available. Mm-hmm. So what I had found was all of those quilts, which were my favorite fabrics anyway, were all from that 1870 to 1890 time period.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's scrap quilts. Yep.
How do you know when you are looking at it? Because a lot of them aren't dated.
They aren't dated, but you start to recognize the types of fabric, the colors of the fabric, not necessarily the patterns, but definitely colors.
So when you're looking, Julie, because, you know, you're sort of doing the specific grouping, but are you also doing specific colors? Do you have certain colors that you lean towards or want to have more of?
You know, I think it's almost the same thing for me, because those colors from that time period are the indigo blues, the reds, the morning grays. You know, all the colors that I love happen to be in that time period.
Ah, okay. So it just all sort of wraps up. Because the one picture that I got was, and it had some pinks in it. Were they actually pink originally?
Double pinks were from that time period. The true bubblegum pinks were probably more 20s, 30s. So the double pinks from that time period are more a pink with a red over top, or a pink with a dark pink. so they read more all over pink, like a darker pink.
Yeah, yeah, and they're soft. They're kind of, you know, well, some of them are soft. You know, they have that little sort of, well, maybe because they're faded.
Those little prints in there.
Faded and used. Now, do you ever know any of the history of the original maker?
Not a lot of the time. I think that's probably very common also. I did buy at an antique show, there were four or five quilts from a family. So those I all knew, you know, who made them and about what time they made them. But most of the time, you know, I'm at a flea market or an antique store, I'm in a booth, and unless somebody has attached that information to a quilt, I don't have that information.
Yeah, that's what I hear a lot from people who, you know, it's just not available. People didn't document like they do now.
Yeah, which is a reminder to all of us that also these quilts that we should be documenting, taking a picture, putting a label on, or else someone else at the store had suggested that we should have, and which I wished I would have, is taking a picture of every quilt that you've ever made and slipping it in a book. You know, it's very easy to do that, even if you're not going to make a label.
Right, right. Okay, we're going to get right on that, Julie.
Me too.
So let's talk about the book, Remembering the Past, Reproduction Quilts Inspired by Antique Favorites. So in here, almost all of the quilts, you have the antique, which is what you do a lot with American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine, is they'll pattern your antique quilts. But in the book, you remade them in new fabrics. How did you decide which ones to do?
Well, it usually is by which fabrics are available on the market. So when I have a collection of 200 quilts, I can't just go to a certain quilt in that collection and say, today I'd like to remake that. You know, when I purchase fabrics for the store, I'm at Quilt Market, I can, you know, you kind of remember, that fabric or that type of fabric is in that quilt I own, you know. So it's more what's available on the market is what dictates which ones I reproduce.
Okay. So when you were doing this book, did you work on these quilts over a period of time then?
Yes, exactly. I had, there's guilds that invite me, and we started out by doing lectures and giving them a little bit of history on quilts, and what they really wanted was to see as many quilts as they could. So we'd bring 100 quilts, you know, show them, and then if people had questions, then they'd ask as they went along. And we were in Iowa, and we were doing this, and, you know, happened to look up in the audience, and there were several people from American Patchwork and Quilting that were in the audience, and actually got to see then in person, you know, a lot of the quilts that were new and old, and that's, you know, how Martingale ended up hearing about it and then contacting me and said, would you be willing to share some of these quilts and the antiques and the new ones that you've made?
It's a wonderful book because you don't always make them identical to the original, which is really nice. So you get to see it in a different colorway. Such as, why don't you tell me about the one called Bordered Stars? Because the brown stars against that pink of the antique just sparkle.
The Bordered Stars was one that we were doing for, we had shown the antique quilt to American Patchwork and Quilting, and at that time I had done several quilts with bubblegum pink in them. When our store was featured as a top shop, those quilts were both double pink. So when I spoke to them, they said, is there any way we can use this quilt but maybe do it in a different colorway? Because I tended, you know, up until then to make them pretty much match the old quilt. So I was excited. They suggested maybe red, so we tried it on red, we tried it on navy, we tried it on a lot of different colors, and because the backgrounds of those stars were dark, it worked wonderful on that light shirting. Yeah, it was by accident that one ended up that way.
Yeah, I really like it. It's both versions are fabulous. The other thing I want you to tell me about is you have stories about some of these observations, maybe is more the right word. Tell me about the broken dishes, the antique quilt, because it's a little bit unique.
It is. The broken dishes quilt, I had several in my collection already, and if you look at pictures of antique quilts and you see a broken dishes, I hadn't at that point ever seen one where they had done diagonal rows of blocks rather than set side by side, or sometimes they're in a circular pattern. Mm-hmm. So that intrigued me. And also, I think for picking fabrics for that, ordinarily we would pick one color for that mm-hmm. row, where they just did a row of color but mixed the colors within the row.
Mm-hmm.
Most often it was muslin as the second color in the block. Every once in a while she'd stick a shirting in there. So mm-hmm. so just the arrangement and the way she picked colors was fascinating to me on that one.
Yeah, I really like it. Just it gives a real vertical feel.
It does.
Yeah.
And you don't really see, because the muslin on the outside of the block is mm-hmm. close to the shirting, which is the connector block.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that. You don't really see the whole broken dish block. So it gives
right.
you, it almost gives you an idea of like a little oval going down that quilt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, right. It's interesting to pick apart the actual block shape. It's like, whoa, okay, it's different than what it looks like just from a distance.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to touch on one more in here. We have about 2 minutes.
Okay.
It's called the 81 patch at the back. I'm just fascinated about the colorations. And this one, you just patterned the antique in here.
Right, and we didn't do that one at the time because we didn't have a great selection of the double pink nor the cheddar. And there was a lot of cheddar in that quilt, and mm-hmm. I only really had one or two cheddars in the store at the time, so we decided just to do the old one on that one. And the thing that I found fascinating on that one was, usually when I pick fabrics for a quilt, I do really stick to one time period, but that one had small pieces of fabric that were from like 1820 to 1835.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started studying that quilt too, normally when we would pick fabrics for an 81 patch or a 9 patch or whatever, we'd be consistent on the light and dark, or two mm-hmm. colors within that 81 patch or 9 patch. And she actually had many colors within each 81 patch. So I don't know if it was because of the fabrics that were available to her at the time. Mm-hmm. But she did two colors, so it almost looked like strippies. She did some mm-hmm. that had darks only in the center, which gave it a bullseye effect. I just think that's a really interesting quilt.
Yeah, one is like all dark. It's like...
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yes.
It is so fascinating. So tell everybody where your shop is so they can come and maybe get a peek of an antique quilt.
That would be wonderful. We are in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, right on we're in the older part of downtown in an older building, which fits our store perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
We're about an hour from Milwaukee, probably two and a half hours from Chicago, 10 or 15 minutes from Madison. And we're right off the interstate, so it's an easy place to come and see and visit us.
Yeah, and you can go to jjstitches.com online. Julie,
this has been
wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat.
Congratulations on your book.
Thank you so much.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and you can visit allpeoplequilt.com and visit me at patsloan.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.